Hello, everyone. This is Eric Pennington, and welcome to the Spirit of EQ podcast. We're glad that you've tuned in. A few things we wanted to tell you at the beginning of the show, and that's this podcast was created to be a tool to help you, primarily to discover and grow your EQ. Science and our own lived experiences confirm that the better we are at managing our emotions, the better we're going to be at making decisions, which leads to a better life. And that's something we all want. We're glad that you've taken out the time today to listen and hope that something that you hear will lead to a breakthrough. Hey, one last thing. We'd really appreciate a review on whichever platform you use to listen. And if you want to, leave some comments about what you heard today, as well as follow and subscribe. That way you won't miss a single episode as we continue this journey. And with that, the show begins. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Spirit of EQ podcast. I'm Eric Pennington. Joining us today, we have a very special guest, Ellen Isaacs, who is a licensed orthopedic physical therapist and nutrition coach. She is also a former Division I cross-country and track athlete, which I thought was very intriguing because I have never actually met and talked to that. But Ellen, welcome to the Spirit of EQ podcast.
Thanks. Happy to be here.
Cool. So our paths kind of crossed by way of a mutual friend. And I had talked to her about, you know, we want to do an episode around nutrition and exercise and things of that nature. And she recommended you highly. And I thought, wow, that's great. And I know when we talked offline, I learned more about your story and the connection specifically to the nutrition coaching piece that I thought was fascinating. So I wanted to dig into that to begin with, is to basically, so I know you've got the background about, you know, athletics, exercise, physical therapy, and all of that, but can you tell our audience a bit about how did you get into nutrition coaching?
Yeah, so I will try to keep this slightly more concise than when we talked, but so I started running when I was a freshman in high school, and honestly, I started running because I had an eating disorder, and so I, long story short, ended up seeing a lot of success in running, and I think that kind of paved the way for me to have kind of a bad relationship with my body size and how fast I could run. So because I started eating or running when I had an eating disorder and was a fast runner when I started running, I think I just always assumed that if I gained weight or got bigger, then I wouldn't have that same kind of success. And so, you know, needless to say, went on to run in college and continued to struggle with my eating disorder. And I never really saw the kind of success that I think I expected I would see from myself. And I think a lot of my coaches expected to see from me too, because I just couldn't get it right with nutrition. Like, you know, at the end of the day, if you're training really hard and you're not recovering really hard, then you are going to fall apart every single time. And that's what happened to me. So I left college on a good note. I ran really well at my last college track meet, and was feeling really excited to, you know, keep training in PT school. And then in PT school, I mean, I just got bone injury after bone injury after bone injury. And, you know, I got to a point where I finally was just like fed up. Like I was like, I'm either going to quit running or something's going to change, because it was like absolutely. And you know, whether or not you're an athlete, I think that you can understand that if you put all of your energy and effort and emotion into something, and like right when it matters, you see it fall apart every time. It's like, that's just absolutely heartbreaking. And that was kind of the point that I was at with running, because it was like a week before I had a big race planned, I would get a stress fracture. And so throughout my time at OU, I had seen a number of registered dietitians, and this is not at all to rag on any of them, because I think that they were helping me in the best way that they knew how at that time. And I will also say I probably was not as open to help in that time as I was later on down the road, which, right, you know, as everyone knows, makes a world of a difference. But long story short, I didn't have a ton of great experiences with any of the registered dietitians that I'd seen in the past, because a lot of them just really emphasized intuitive eating. And for someone who lived 10 to 15 years of their life with an eating disorder, it's like, you're telling me I can eat when I'm hungry and stop when I'm full. Well, I'm never hungry because I have completely ruined all of my hunger cues at this point. And so it almost felt like, wow, I was able to justify not eating because I wasn't hungry. And my dietitian said I didn't have to eat if I wasn't hungry. And so having all of those experiences, I finally, you know, when I got to this breaking point at the end of PT school, this girl that I knew from high school was a nutrition coach. And I was like, you know what, for some reason, something about the way that she is putting information into the world is very appealing to me. And, you know, it was really cheap at the time. It was like $150 a month. And I was like, I can afford that. I'm just going to dive in and do it for 3 months and see what happens. Right. And it was like an absolute game changer for me. Like, I don't know why, but I think that taking, you know, having someone meet me where I was versus like I came to her, I'm just throwing arbitrary numbers out there, but let's say I came to her eating 1,000 calories. She met me where I was and she said, we obviously need to get that number higher. But I'm not going to tell you, even though I know that you need to be eating way more than that, I'm not going to tell you that you need to eat that amount right now. I'm going to just inch you up little by little. And, you know, eventually we'll get you to the place where you need to be. And that was very refreshing to me, because that was the other thing a lot of the dietitians that I had seen in the past didn't do. They would say, Ellen, you're eating 1,000 calories. We need to get you up to 3,000 calories. And it was like, that number was so jarring to someone who had such a bad relationship with food that I was like automatically like out from the get-go. Right. And so, you know, I worked with her for over a year, and it took that entire year to get me up to the number of calories that I needed to be eating. But it was like the best thing that she could have possibly done for my buy-in, because, you know, a little increase was like not so scary to me, but it was a big enough increase, although it was little, for me to see like, oh my gosh, I have energy. Oh my gosh, I can focus on my schoolwork. Oh my gosh, wow, I haven't had an injury in 6 months. Like, wow, I actually want to go out and meet up with friends for food because I'm not so like horribly afraid of social settings involving food. And so it was just totally transformative for me. And I think that when I had finally come out on the other side, or at least that's how I felt, I was like, man, I have to help people feel the way that this has made me feel, because it was just totally a game changer for me.
Wow. That's powerful. I'm curious, did the eating disorder did it correlate to injury? I mean, was that part of the reason why you were getting injured, or is that a separate thing altogether?
Oh no, it was definitely playing in, because, you know, your body can only recover from what you give it the energy. Your body only has the energy to recover with what you give it the energy to recover with. I know that's kind of a mouthful, but at the end of the day,
yeah, I get that.
So
isn't that the kind of the same thing when they talk about the reason why, like if you're lifting, you're basically breaking down and tearing muscle, and you need that protein to help the process of repair and obviously to build, right? Am I kind
exactly.
of?
Exactly. So anytime you work out, you're creating damage. And for your body to keep all the essential functions going, like, you know, you're not thinking about any of the things you're doing, but every time you get up to go to the bathroom, any gesture you make with your hands, anytime you cook food, chew food, digest food, all those things take energy from your body. And even things even smaller than that, like hormone release and things like that to tell your body that you're hungry, that all takes energy. And so if your body doesn't have the energy to do those essential functions and what you're asking it to do from an exercise standpoint, something's got to give. And I can tell you right now, it's not going to be those essential functions. It's going to be like, well, we don't have the energy to recover from that workout, so we're just going to let it break down.
Wow. That's such a powerful analogy. You painted that wonderfully. It makes me appreciate the value of both. And obviously that journey to getting it, quote, right, as far as how you were viewing food and getting the right amount of calories and all that, that was a journey, right? No overnight fixes, but how powerful a transformation. I'm curious as well, when you talked about, and as you feel comfortable, did the athletics kind of fuel the issue that you have with food, or was it kind of neutral in the, in playing a part?
Definitely was a little bit triggering. And I think that part of that is just because, you know, like there are some sports where, you know, the research shows that eating disorders are just a little bit more common, and running is one of them. And okay. So, you know, lining up with a bunch of people who are the same size as me or slightly smaller or whatever, you know, like I'm noticing, oh, this girl beat me by 15 seconds and she's definitely smaller than me.
Yeah. Wow. Wow. So, and not to mention, and I know we didn't even, when we spoke offline, I didn't ask you about, you know, how many races you won or what your rank and all that stuff was, but obviously, at least to me, you were pretty successful. If you were involved in Division One, so how did that competitiveness factor in? Not just on the eating disorder, but just in your mental outlook on things.
I think, you know, I think that if you're a competitive person in one area of your life, it kind of bleeds into every area of your life, and so. You know, I kind of took everything as a challenge, even things that weren't supposed to be a challenge and things that were bad to for me to view as a challenge.
Yeah, I got you. That makes total sense. So I'm going to just kind of linger a little bit around the running experience that you had as an athlete. How did the coaches view things? Were they laser focused on, hey, we just got to win? Or was there a, hey, we're concerned even though you're successful? How did that play out?
So I was very fortunate with this because not all college coaches are like this. But I will say one coach in particular, and I had a handful of coaches at OU because there was kind of quick turnaround with coaching at OU when I was there, but I had one coach, and I will remember this moment probably as long as I live because it just meant so much to me. But, you know, when the first semester that he started coaching me, he like had me come in for a one-on-one athlete coach meeting just to kind of talk about goals and blah, blah, blah. And
right.
He, you know, when I was leaving, he said, do you have anything that you feel like I should know that might be impacting your training or might impact your training? And I was like, well, I don't really know if I have an eating disorder at this point. Like I technically don't, but I have a lot of tendencies. And so do with that what you will. And then every workout after that, that he and I did together, like he would always have a snack in his bag for me. Like, because he knew that I had this, I would be more likely to show up and not recover the way that I should. And so, you know, after the workout, he'd be like, here you go, Ellen, I brought this PB&J for you. And that meant a lot to me because it just was like a subtle way of like showing me that he cared about me as a person and not just me as the runner. And I would say that's how, even though we had a lot of turnover, that was pretty much how all of my coaches were. Like at the end of the day, like they wanted, I mean, their job relies on us performing. But they would never, you know, they would never tell me to line up if they knew that I was sick.
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting when you say that, because I know, I of a story of a different variety. Division One athletics, high performing, highly rated type thing, not in running, but coach knows that there's an issue, but still just pushes through to you've got to do this. You've got to get in the gym. You have to lift. You have to. And it got to a point where this athlete was like, I can't. It's too painful. But it was, I'm sorry. We you're part of this team. And if you want this and if you want that, that kind of thing. And I think about you are very fortunate that you had a series of coaches, right, who really cared enough to say, hey, you know, if you're not ready, then today's not the day, or, you know, to the point you, or the story of the giving you a snack. So with the eating disorder, you obviously were able to address it. And I know that there is no cure per se. I mean, it's a battle. I don't, at least from my perspective, Ellen, the things that I have that I struggle with, I more than likely will always struggle with. Now, being victorious is an achievable goal, but the idea that somehow, well, I'll never ever have to deal with that again, I think that's fantasy. But that's just this podcast host opinion, my own lived experience. So you found nutrition coaching really helped you to a breakthrough. And I know there could be others with eating disorders that need other types of help, and they may find that that's not enough, or they may find they didn't need to do a nutrition coach, whatever, right? But if you've got somebody maybe in our audience who may be out there who's like, I think I may, but I don't want to talk about it, or I don't want someone to know, or whatever, what advice would you give them? Just as a starting point, I know you can't solve, but just what would you tell them that might be helpful?
This might be cliche, but to take the leap, like whatever. I mean, unless you're telling me, if you're saying that they have some sort of inkling, like, I think this might be helpful, but I'm kind of scared to take the jump, I would always say, just try, because that was kind of how I felt for a long time. Like, do I really want to like waste my time and money and energy trying another like person who's supposed to help me with my nutrition? And, right. You know, at the end of the day, the road to recovery is not linear, and you're likely not going to get it right on the first try, but you're just prolonging it by not trying at all.
I'm smiling, Ellen, because, there is a guy by the name, and I always mispronounce his name, so I'm sorry. His name is, I think it's Jocko Willink, I think is his name. He's a former Navy SEAL. That's always what I remember about him. And I was watching this clip of him basically outlining kind of to what you said. One day at the gym, you're not going to get anything. You're not going to notice anything, and it probably will suck. But you go another day, and you're building these days up. And he said, by 100 days, you'll see something. That's why it's so important not to give up. And I like what you alluded to or pointed to about the idea that if you're thinking it might be, go ahead and take the leap. I think that's in some ways, like in our world of emotional intelligence, our emotions are communicators to us. And we get them confused, right? Because some people go, well, if I feel fear, that's bad. I shouldn't feel fear. But we don't realize that maybe it's fear trying to say, go ahead and take the leap.
Definitely.
And Ellen, I mean, I've had to really kind of break this down a bit to other audiences at times, is that we run the other way when we feel an emotion, when in reality, some of the most helpful things we can do, one of the most is, can we sit with it? Just give it time to communicate. Why am I afraid? What's behind the fear? What would happen if I took the leap? What could really be the worst? What could be the best? If we give it time, we give ourselves that opportunity to open a door that maybe, if we take the approach, oh, that's fear, I got to go, and just shut the door and run, we miss an opportunity. So I find that's just fascinating. Go ahead.
I would love to add something to that. And I think this goes for people, both people who are trying to get out of a bad cycle with, you know, having a bad relationship with food, whether that be overeating, undereating, or just generally being unhappy with their body. I just think that a lot of the fear comes from knowing that to make change, you have to change. And I think that's really scary for a lot of people. Like, can I form these new habits? Or, you know, will I fail? And, you know, to that, I would say, even if you don't get the exact outcome you hope for, you're still growing and changing and evolving from just like attempting.
Yeah. It's almost like if you're moving forward, you are experiencing success.
Right.
Right. I mean, I know that, you know, when you think about it, whether it's, you know, how you view your body, how you view other people, whatever it may be, I think when we can understand that the moving forward piece is one of the best indicators of success, not some outcome out there in the future that we've maybe created a story around, right? That in reality is not going to deliver the kind of, you know, it's kind of this idea, like, I always wanted to do this. I always wanted to do it. I always wanted to do it. And then when I got it, it was like, oh. And I think that has to do with the idea about dopamine, right? One of the things that it has to do with is the dopamine hit, right? It's like when we hit the goal, at that point, the dopamine goes down because you did it, right?
Right.
That's why I think it's so important to find, I can't say pleasure because, I mean, it's hard work. I mean, it really is. But to find, to set your goals in these ways that, so you can celebrate when, you know what? I used to didn't even walk, but now I'm walking like 10 minutes every other day. Celebrate, you know, and oh my gosh, it's 6 months. I used to didn't even run, but now I walk 6 minutes and I run for a minute. I mean, it's that kind of stuff, right?
Yeah.
All right. So let me pivot I'm going to stay a little bit with the nutrition coaching. Is it as fulfilling as you thought it would be to be a practitioner? And then talk a little bit about what your client makeup looks like. I mean, what are they dealing with? That kind of thing.
So we're talking about nutrition coaching, not PT.
Yes. Right. Right. Okay. Correct.
Yes. Nutrition coaching is, it's so funny. I actually, right before this podcast, I had a counseling appointment, like brain therapy, you know? My therapist was like asking me about my job as a PT. And I was like, oh, you know, this, that, blah, blah, blah. And then she asked me about my job in nutrition coaching. And she was like, Ellen, the difference between the way that you had just absolutely lit up about nutrition coaching was so, it was just totally opposite. And I'm not saying I don't love being a PT because I do. I think because it hits so close to home, like I love seeing these women just like go through these changes that I went through too. So it is really fulfilling. I will say, you know, there's certainly challenge when a client signs on and you know they aren't willing to make those changes and they just think because they signed up for coaching and they're paying X number of dollars a month they're like magically going to just have the changes happen to them versus like recognizing that it still takes hard work. So there are challenges for sure, but yeah, it's absolutely amazing and I love what I do for sure. And in terms of the type of clients, I would say a lot of that, I mean, I've worked with a mixed bag, but I would say I've worked 97% with women. I have worked with a few men. And most of them either have, most of them want to make a change in some capacity. And I would say a lot of them would like to see body composition changes. So either they want to lose weight or put on muscle mass or a little bit of both. But some, you know, some want to just see improvements in performance in their sport, especially if they're a runner. I think because I'm a runner, I attract runners too. So kind of a mixed bag.
Mixed bag. So yeah, that's really interesting because Again, what really intrigued me when we talked was your story. And I mean, who better to talk to about this than someone who's lived it, right? And obviously being certified is wonderful. I mean, that to me is kind of like, that's icing on the cake, right? But the idea that you have a story behind this, this is not something you just picked up because you said, hey, you know, I'm already a licensed physical therapist. I should be a nutrition coach, right? And I do believe this, Ellen, just as an aside, I think our country, our population, our whole is so deep. And I don't say that with pessimism, because talking to you makes me realize that there are all kinds of resources. But we really need to get this thing called our health in check, because in your world of physical therapy, and I'm going to pivot to some questions around that, not your specific employer or anything, but about the healthcare system. I am of the belief that we're in danger of putting so much burden on the system that is going to be unable to provide the level of care that we've known in the United States as, quote, normal, right? I've had this conversation with many people that I'm doing anything and everything I can. And I am someone with autoimmune diseases, right? But I am doing everything I can with every energy I have to make sure that I don't have to go into the system unless it's absolutely necessary. I want to eat the right things. I want to exercise. I want to manage my mental health. I want to do all of that, because there's tons and tons of people who are in the system. And I don't think, based on my experiences, that the care is able to keep up. You know, I've had times, you know, I've had these doctor's appointments, right, where it's a video visit and the doctor is like an hour and 15 minutes late. And it's not because they have too many patients to manage. I mean, it's legitimately, but they're feeling pressure from the system, the hospital system. You need to see more patients. So in turn, it takes someone like me. I become patient number 478, and I've got this much time to spend with you, and then next. So that's a lot of opining, and I'm going to pivot out of that. So tell me about what you've observed in this healthcare system as it relates to what maybe concerned you. Okay. And that wasn't, my little speech was not designed to get you to go that direction, but what is it about the healthcare system that you observed from obviously being a licensed physical therapist that concerned you? And then the follow-up to that would be, what's giving you some hope?
So I would say my biggest concern, I mean, I do second some of the things that you're saying. Like, I think that the system is very overwhelmed for a number of reasons. But I will say that I think that if I had to just pick one, it would be that a lot of providers fail to look at the person as a whole. So, you know, if someone comes in and they say, I have shoulder pain, mm-hmm. and, you know, or, you know what, let me take a step back. Let me say someone goes in to see their doctor and they say, I have shoulder pain, and, you know, the doctor is learning more about them and they're trying to, they don't stop to look at the whole person. They say, you have shoulder pain. Okay, let's try a steroid shot, or let's go to PT, instead of asking more questions to go with that. And I know this is kind of a jumbled response right now, but
you're good.
I guess what I'm trying to say is there are so many things that can contribute. Like, we need to zoom out a little bit and not just focus on the body part that hurts. We need to ask questions about, you know, what other kind of symptoms do you have? Because we know that the way that we eat, especially in the US, in the way that we live, like we tend to lean towards an inflammatory lifestyle. So the things that we eat tend to be very inflammatory, not moving like ever, except to like maybe go to the bathroom or to go pick up some fast food or something. Like we are not helping ourselves. And so it's totally not out of the ordinary that we would start to develop aches and pains here and there. And so, you know, if I've been seeing a patient for 3 months and their shoulder pain is completely unchanged and they have had imaging and it's really not, you know, convincing that there's anything worth operating on going on in the shoulder, then we definitely need to zoom out and say, what kind of lifestyle factors can we modify here before just like telling you to take ibuprofen every single day of your life and sending you on your way?
Right. Boy, that's really good. That's really good because I think just from my own personal vantage point, and I think about, you know, that zooming out idea, you know, and it kind of reminds me, and I don't remember what physician told me this, but, or maybe I saw it in an interview, that oftentimes where you're feeling the pain is not the area of issue. Right. So I may have pain in my shoulder, but it may have something to do with my low back or something like that. Right. And I think if you don't zoom out, you know, and I get it, especially in a physical therapy perspective, you know, you're going to, because you're going, oh, your shoulder, what area of your shoulder? And you're going to go, I wonder if that potentially might have something to do with this area. Are you a runner? Do you lift weights? I mean, you know, how sedentary are you? I think that's all vital. And I want to be clear for you and to our audience. I get it. Also, Americans have not done ourselves any favors by going into the system with tons of lifestyle issues, right? Because if I'm eating fast processed food and I'm not moving, and I'm not taking care of my mental health, on and on and on, and then something goes south on me and I enter into the system, well, one person, but then when one person is 1,000 and that doctor can't zoom out, he may say, or she may say, I don't have time to zoom out. I've got to see this many patients and I've got to do it within this amount of time. So I want to say it is a shared responsibility. You know, I get that. So in the spirit of optimism, what's giving you hope? What have you seen that gives you hope?
Honestly, I think I have seen a lot more patients coming to me who have educated themselves. Like, you know, I have a number of patients who will come in and say, my doctor said this, but, you know, I did some research on my own. And what do you think about this, this, and this, Ellen? And to me, even if it's way off, I'm like, that is still so inspiring to me and makes me excited that you are taking, you know, responsibility for your own health. You're looking into questions that can be asked. Because sometimes you're right, like the doctors don't have time to like spend an hour with everyone. But if a patient comes in with a very specific question, then that might make the doctor be like, oh, actually, that's a good point, and we should look into that. Not that they don't have that base knowledge in general, but they see so many people a day that sometimes it's hard.
From a human perspective, yeah, you can't keep it all flowing in every situation. So when you are encountering those that do bring in sort of, I've done a little bit of research, are they typically open to like course correction? You know, like, hey, that was a great idea, but typically the focus should be here instead. I mean, does that make sense?
Are you asking if the doctors are open to that?
Yeah.
I think it is a mixed bag for sure. I think that some doctors are like, wow, that was a really great suggestion. We should look into that. Like, you know what? I've had so many good experiences today, I guess, but I had a doctor's appointment myself today. And at the end of the session, the doctor asked me, is there anything that you were hoping that I would look into today that I didn't? I'm like, man, that was such a great way to end the appointment, because I think a lot of people leave appointments feeling like they weren't heard or like they didn't get, you know, get something accomplished that they hope to get accomplished. And so I felt like ending on that note was really great. And that would provide a really great opportunity for a patient to say, hey, like, this is kind of what I was thinking. What do you think about that?
Yeah. Yeah. That's really powerful. I can't help but think, that, and we were talking about this in another recording, you know, there was the subject matter is not related to the medicine or physical health. It was talking about the overwhelming nature of all of the bad news that can be consumed in our lives, right? A la media, you know, news, you know, events and stuff. And we kind of came back to this idea that, you know, we can't control what's happening over in Israel and the Gaza Strip. I just, there's nothing I can do to make that stop or continue, whatever it may be, right? But what if we all focused on being the best version of ourselves that we could be? That's our one job. See, I really believe that if you and me and my business partners and your family and my family, I mean, each individual going, I'm going to do this. I'm going to work on being the best version possible, with all of the mistakes and imperfections. Sometimes wonder if that wouldn't actually move us to some really positive outcomes, because I think that in some ways we've kind of done it in the healthcare system. We've kind of punted to the physician. Well, I'm not feeling good. What are you going to prescribe? I need a pill. I need a procedure. And I think we're robbing ourselves of the great most honorable responsibility, and that's to take care of ourselves. So let's pivot to.
Can I interrupt?
Yeah,
you to
ask something? Yeah, go ahead.
So I wanted to, this is going back to, you know, us talking about like the bad news and like what I wish I would see in the healthcare system more, something along those lines. And it made me think about a patient I saw a while back, and she was just having this ongoing, like, chronic knee pain. She was a runner. And she was like very diligent about doing everything I told her to do outside of PT. She always showed up to PT, literally never missed an appointment, had x-rays, MRIs, and the doctors were like, there's nothing wrong. Like, on paper, there's nothing wrong with your knee. And she was just so frustrated. And, you know, I think this is a good example of a time when it's really important to zoom out, because it's like, okay, your knee's hurting and we already looked at your hip and your hip looks pretty good. And we've worked on your hip too. And we worked on your knee and we worked on your ankle. And so, like, you know, at the end of the day, something's going on here. And her and I had like a long conversation about nutrition. Mm-hmm. And, you know, with working with her, I started to realize like maybe her nutrition's not quite where it should be. And so I kind of decided to dive into that a little bit deeper in this session where we talked about it in a large amount, for a long time. And right. I learned, like, I mean, this girl had been keto, on Weight Watchers, like intermittent fasting, only eating for 4 hours a day, like all this number of crazy diets. And I was like, listen, we can do physical therapy until the cows come home. You can do every single thing that I say. You can do everything your doctors say. But at the end of the day, you are not going to heal if you are not fueling. Like, that is all there is to it. And like, sometimes your performance goals or your running goals cannot live in the same space as your body composition goals. Like, sometimes you have to pick one over the other, because if you're trying to lose weight, then you are not recovering the way that you need to be. And so I think that's an example of a time where it's important to be looking at the big picture, because up until that point, she had seen 3 or 4 doctors and no one had paid even a bit of attention to her nutrition at all. And in all fairness, like, that was the first serious conversation I had with her. And that was like 8 weeks into PT. So that's a fault of my own as well.
Wow. So it's very obvious to me, and maybe it's a duh moment for me. There's a connection between our eating, our nutrition, and our physical shape and recovery and all of the above, right?
Absolutely. And I would say that also, I mean, that was a situation of her not eating enough. But I would say that also plays into the food choices that we make in general. Like, you know, having a super highly inflammatory processed diet, like your body is going to have a harder time recovering than someone who has their diet in check and is eating whole nutritious foods.
Well, and Ellen, I mean, we haven't even talked about the impact of a highly inflammatory diet on our brains. And we, you're just talking about one area, just one.
Right.
And I've said this to clients, you know, it's like, you know, I'm not right here. I'm here to talk about emotional intelligence, but I'd be remiss if I didn't tell you that if you're eating really bad, poorly, it's going to affect your ability to manage those emotions that you're experiencing. It's just, and I wonder sometimes, you know, okay, where did we get off track on that? Right. When did we disconnect the impact of food on all these things? And maybe I'll have you back for a second episode and we could talk about that, but it just is amazing. And I want to, because of the sake of time, I want to get to this next one that has really been on my mind as it relates to your work because of the blend, right? You have the nutrition and you have the physical piece. So if someone out there is wondering, okay, I hear you, I get it, I understand what you're saying. So what do you think is my first step in getting myself to this, where at least I'm getting to a good solid ground as it relates to the physical piece and the nutrition piece? And when I mean physical, I mean as far as exercise.
I think it depends on your goals, but I would almost always answer a question like that with small steps. And we kind of talked about this a little bit earlier in the podcast too, but you are not going to, let's say you have a goal to run a half marathon next year. Like, you are not going to go out, if you've never run a step in your life, you are not going to go out and run 7 miles tomorrow and feel good doing it and not get hurt doing it probably. So, you know, if you're a person who is super sedentary and you have that goal to run a half marathon in a year, then I would say, can we start a walking program? And can it be something, can we be realistic about what you have time for and what you can make time for in this season of life, without it cutting into other areas of your life that really mean something to you? Like, you know, even if that's just, I'm going to go for a 10-minute walk every other day. But I think the important thing, especially in terms of staying or preventing yourself from becoming discouraged, is setting attainable small goals.
Attainable small goals. Interesting. Because on two fronts, that Jocko Willink, again, I apologize if I'm butchering his last name, that was in that same talk. It was about, it's these small steps toward that build something, right? So how about for that person who is uber competitive, right? They hear you. I get it. Start small, but I want to get this. I want to nail this. I mean, I know that may be, as a coach and your perspective, it might be just something you got to manage the personality and try to remind them. Is that how it works? Or do you, I don't know. Do you get in their face and say, hey, look, you want to get injured or not? I don't know. Well, how do you approach it from that perspective? The uber competitive person.
So I am the uber competitive person. So funny, you know, I was just reading something in the day that was talking about how you sometimes learn your best life lessons from giving advice to other people. And I'm like, yeah, that's me with a lot of my clients. But I would say I typically encourage people to focus on sustainability. So, you know, there is no way that you know, making these huge radical changes in 1 month, like going from doing absolutely nothing to, you know, trying to work out for an hour and a half every day is sustainable. It's just not, like, you have to build that kind of lifestyle up. And so thinking about, you know, do you want to still have these same goals? Do you really want to accomplish this thing? Because if you do, then you need to look at it from a more slow and steady, sustainable viewpoint.
Do you see that as the same for nutrition? Because I was about ready to go to the person who maybe whose diet is not good at all, very inflammatory in nature. Is it, don't just go cold turkey on sugar, just start to eliminate maybe one type of snack and still keep the others until you can build up, or is it different?
100%. Yes. It's definitely the same. I would say even more so with nutrition, because I will never, ever, ever encourage a like all or nothing mindset with food. Right. Although we know that there are better choices and worse choices in terms of food, like I will never tell a client to not honor their cravings. At least sometimes I think that there needs to be a limit on that. But I think that it's really important to acknowledge that, you know, having ice cream is okay. And, you know, if your guilty pleasure is whatever your guilty pleasure is, I mean, I say guilty and I should put that in quotations because you shouldn't feel guilt about anything that you eat.
Right.
But yes, I think small changes are really important. And I think that it's important to note too, that because of the way that our gut microbiome works, the more that we give it things that make it happy, which would be things like phytonutrients, like plants, and other micronutrient dense foods, the more it alters what we crave. So a lot of times people will find that, you know, as they start incorporating more nutrient dense foods, their cravings kind of shift from, like, maybe at one point I was craving Flamin' Hot Cheetos and Ho-Hos, and now all of a sudden I'm recognizing that, my gosh, now my cravings are like berries on top of yogurt or something like that.
Yeah. That's really good that you noted that. And I'm also glad that you pointed out the idea about, you know, I know you were just quotations, guilty pleasure, but you shouldn't feel guilty. That's why we try at Spirit of EQ to make sure that, yes, we want to educate you, but we don't want to put you in a position where you're feeling that, oh my gosh, if I didn't handle anger right, then end of world. No, I mean, when you mess up with your anger, what you do is just say, hey, I'm sorry. That was not the approach I should have taken. Please forgive me. I'm asking for you to give me another whatever. Right. And I think that's the same thing to a degree, like with food. It's like, because you have that slice of chocolate cake does not mean they're going to have a burial ceremony for you tomorrow. That's highly unlikely that's going to happen. So you're probably going to be okay. And I know this is, I think about it from the perspective of the work that we do and in the podcasting and influencer world. I mean, some of these people out there, Ellen, are making these absolute statements, and I'm going, you're basing that absolute statement off your experience, one lived experience. You can't say that's for everybody. Why not move it to more of an inspirational, right? Like, hey, I tried this. This worked out phenomenal. It may not be right for you, but it may be something you should look into. Then they can, right? Oh my gosh, the clock. This is such a great conversation. So I got one last thing before we end. Talk about for our audience, what are some of the things or the thing that you're excited about right now? Maybe it's relating to your nutrition coaching practice. Maybe it's something else. Give you an opportunity to talk a little bit about that. What's exciting you lately?
Oh man, I have been like really a few things. So hopefully I can answer that with a couple of things. But I would say,
let me interrupt you, Ellen. I'm sorry. I did not do this for, but for our audience, we will have your information in the show notes. So if anybody wants to reach out to you, we'll make sure that they can do that. So sorry. Awesome. Go ahead.
So first of all, I have been like over the past 6 months have been really heavily digging into, like gut health and the gut microbiome, and all of that literature has been so cool to explore, both in implementing it in my own life, the things that I've learned, and also my clients. I really started digging into it because I was having like these terrible breakouts, and I have always had generally pretty nice skin. And I was like, I am not doing anything different. Why is my skin all of a sudden looking like this? And so, you know, I started doing my research and like really digging into the gut microbiome, like I said, and it's just been crazy how much it's impacted my mood, my energy, my digestion, my skin. It's like so cool. And seeing it work its wonders in my clients' lives has been really cool.
So you found a pathway that was connected to your gut microbiome to the skin issues you were having.
Oh yeah. Oh my gosh. Yeah. The gut microbiome has such a huge role in literally everything, in our energy, in our mood, in our mental health. Yes. So, you know, yes, to answer that simply, but, and I would say another thing that I'm really excited about, this is going to sound so salesy, but I'm not trying to be salesy, but, the girl that I nutrition coach under, she owns the business and I work under her. I mean, I have all my own clients, but I work for her business, but she just launched like a Black Friday sale. And I'm really excited because we've already gotten so many inquiries, and I'm just like, literally anytime I get a new client, I'm like so over the moon about it because I just love what I do. So I'm excited about that too.
Awesome. No, that's not too salesy at all. That's awesome. And I think for our audience, as they've got to experience your story and how you got to that place of being a nutrition coach, I think it's very, very compelling. So with that, Ellen, can't thank you enough for coming on the show. And we did definitely want to have you back. As we were talking, you know, two other things were like going through my head. I'm going, but I wonder about that. So we'll save that for the next time. Okay.
Yes, absolutely.
Everyone, we thank you for tuning in to the Spirit of EQ podcast, and we look forward to the next time we're together. Take care.
Hi, everyone. This is Eric again. A couple of things as we've ended the show. We hope you enjoyed it. Hopefully, you're tuning in on a regular basis. We'd love it if you would give us a great review on whatever platform you're listening to the podcast. It's so appreciative and helps us as we try to get more exposure for the work we do and the episodes that we publish. And we're grateful to you as a listener. The second thing is, just remember, our content is for educational purposes only. It's not intended by any stretch to diagnose or to treat anything that may be occurring in your life or anyone else's life that you may be connected to through the podcast. But once again, we appreciate you tuning in to the shows. And as always, we look forward to the next time that we're together. Take care.